A bald eagle at the Raptor Education Group in Antigo died last week from lead poisoning. And our guest this hour says this happens far too often and can be prevented. We'll find out how this hour. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, March 16th. It's believed bald eagles and other birds, including swans and loons, get lead poisoning by ingesting particles of lead from hunting ammunition and from sinkers that are used for fishing. And our guest says this is a shame because there are alternatives to lead for bullets and fishing tackle. And she says a bill in Congress that would exempt ammunition and fishing tackle from the Toxic Substances Control Act is the wrong approach. And we will welcome your thoughts and your questions about the lead poisoning of wildlife at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Marge Gibson, the founder and executive director of the Raptor Education Group, a nonprofit organization dedicated to the care and rehabilitation of injured or orphaned native bird species and public education of wildlife issues. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for being with us. You know, I follow the Raptor Education Group on Facebook, and I noticed your story about this unfortunate situation with the bald eagle. Tell us about this bald eagle that came in last week.
Well, he came in from the La Crosse area, and when he arrived, he was very, very thin, and that is actually one of the symptoms of a chronic lead poisoning. The digestive system shuts down, so they're no longer able to utilize any food that they might be able to eat. And from there on, all the other organs start to shut down. But this particular fellow was very, very thin. He weighed about 5 pounds, which is about half what a male bald eagle should weigh. And he had huge levels of lead. In fact, on our analyzer, we have our own lead analyzer here at Raptor Education Group, because we do so have so many patients that have lead poisoning, it registered too high to read. So that's actually not an unusual situation for many of our bald eagle patients.
And how is it believed this bald eagle had lead poisoning?
Well, we did x-ray him, and there weren't any sinkers visible in the bird. So usually that says that it's from lead ammunition. And this time of year, we have two times of year that we have more patients admitted with lead poisoning, and one is the fall right after the gun hunt, and the other is the spring. And the reason would be that, of course, after gun season, hunters leave gut piles in the forest or in the field, which is the appropriate thing to do. When you get your deer, you want to cool it right away, and you know, gutting it in the field is considered you know, the best option. But unknowingly, there's a lot of lead in the gut piles or in the tissue of the deer that's been shot, or other animals. There's everything from rabbits to pheasant hunting that doesn't require steel shot. So the gut piles and the deer, that actually some that are hit and not and don't die right away, are exposed and are available for bald eagles to eat, and other wildlife as well. Yeah. And people don't realize that bald eagles are they make use of carrion in the wintertime especially. And then in the spring, when spring thaw comes, these piles and these carcasses become available once again, which is what we see now.
Oh, and this is, you say you see many of bald eagles and other birds that suffer from lead poisoning. How,
right.
I mean, how big of a problem is this?
Well, a few years ago, we looked at all of our, actually, several people were looking at a lot of the statistics for rehabilitation centers throughout the country. And we do about 100 bald eagles a year here at Raptor Education Group, and about a quarter of them had lead poisoning. And that does change depending on the year. If we have a lot of snow and it comes early and it covers up these gut piles, we have less cases of lead poisoning because they're covered. But if we have a spring like last spring where, you know, we had a winter that continued through May,
right,
up here, at least in the northern part of the state, by that time the gut piles were degraded to a point where they weren't being utilized, for carrion. So we had lower levels last year because of that. But this year, again, we're having very high levels.
And it's not just bald eagles. Maybe that's the bird you take care of most, but I've been reading that swans and loons and many other birds suffer from this, but I take it they're getting poisoned by the fishing tackle.
Well, we actually do a lot of loons here. We did 15 loons last summer, and they actually usually get a sinker, and often it's from a sinker while it's still on the line. I mean, if someone's using a minnow, a loon will take advantage of that and then swallow it. And once it gets in, due to the interesting digestive system of birds, they have a gizzard which is filled with stones, and it does grind their food. And when that lead sinker gets into the gizzard, it starts to grind, and of course that just exacerbates the problem and makes lead more available. And they can't recover on their own. They have to be chelated with a chemical, calcium versinate or calcium EDTA. They can't recover on their own. If they are left in the wild and not brought in, they die. Trumpeter swans get it in a different way. They also can ingest sinkers, but those are usually the ones that are on the bottom of the ponds or rivers or streams. And in low water years, we had, several years ago, we had a very low water year. Those long necks of a swan seine a lot of the materials from the bottom of the ponds. They utilize that for their food, of course, little invertebrates and all kinds of plant material. And along with that, comes bits of little stones and things that they use for digestion. So you know, that's normal for them. But little pieces of lead, which are shot over bodies of water, and now that's illegal. But lead is pervasive and stays in the environment, and that's part of the problem. It becomes available again, and it stays for a very long time.
Could you briefly talk a little bit about this chelation that you do to rehabilitate the birds, and how successful that is?
Well, it's first of all, it's a very, very expensive process for us. It costs us between $1,000 and $2,000 per bird to chelate them. It's a calcium versinate, and they're injections. We give two injections a day to the patients, and it chelates or removes the lead from the bloodstream of the bird. And lead is stored in the bone marrow. So we treat for 4 days, twice a day. It's a very arduous process for the bird as well. It's the material itself destroys tissue, so we have to be very, very careful when we do injections. And then we give them a rest period of 4 days. So the blood goes back through the bone marrow and picks up the lead once again. So it's really quite a process. And with some birds that have very, very high levels, we can repeat this process three or four times. It really depends on the birds and how quickly we get them in as to how successful this is. We've had some that had very high levels that, were actually found on a gut pile and had ingested a lot just that day, and were in good shape physically, did not have chronic lead poisoning, but it was acute. I mean, it happened right there.
Mm-hmm.
And they were found, stumbling and starting to convulse. So people brought them in right away, and we were able to start treatment right away. Now, those have a much better success rate. But the ones that, like our unfortunate patient last week, that are so far down in weight that their digestive system has shut down, they really don't come back as well or as completely. By that time, they often have heart damage, liver damage, kidney damage, and it's not something we can recover.
We will check news from Wisconsin Public Radio and National Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about preventing lead poisoning in wildlife, especially our eagles and loons and swans, after this news. Last week, a bald eagle passed away after being treated for lead poisoning, likely after ingesting particles from hunting ammunition that were left in the remains of a deer. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Marge Gibson, the founder and executive director of the Raptor Education Group Incorporated, which was caring for this eagle that passed away and cares for many eagles and other birds that are suffering from lead poisoning. We are talking about preventing lead poisoning in wildlife, and we are welcoming your questions and your thoughts about this. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So what do you think? Is it time to get the lead out of the environment? Is it time to require hunters and fishers to use lead-free ammunition or fishing sinkers? What do you think? Do you think lead alternatives should be more widely available, or are they? We welcome your thoughts and questions. So, Marge, I know that hunters and fishers, you would at least at this time encourage them, you are encouraging them to use lead-free alternatives to the lead bullets and the lead sinkers?
Right. I think that's, it's a common sense approach and I think very reasonable. Lead poisoning was recognized, in the year 2,000 years ago, with the Greeks. I mean, this is not something that, just became news. And because there's alternatives, in every other aspect of our life, whether it's, paint or gasoline, even the pipes that we use to bring our water into our own homes are now lead-free. And it seems like this is just the last bastion of lead in our environment and affecting even our own society.
What are the alternatives to lead bullets in fishing tackle?
Well, actually, Raptor Education Group started one of the first sinker exchanges in year 2000, exchanging if fishermen would bring in their lead sinkers, we would give them lead alternative sinkers. And even since that time, even since 2000, the changes and the availability and the quality of the sinkers and even jigs that people use for fishing have really improved dramatically. So they're available. I wish that more ammunition was available. You have to use kind of forethought to be able to access that or at least ask for it. I mean, I think if people realize that it's being requested, they're going to make it more available. But there are easy alternatives. The copper jacketed bullet, which is what I actually buy for my own grandson when he hunts, is much safer. It's a lead insert, but the outside is copper, which is much harder, and it makes a a much better kill, a much faster kill. It's stronger, and it doesn't dissipate. Lead is a soft metal and dissipates actually even into the tissue of the bird, of the animal, the muscle, and it becomes. You can't see it. You can't taste it. It's just, it becomes liquefied. And, that's a problem.
So this has been a problem that has been known about for some time now. Why doesn't everyone use these lead alternatives?
Well, I think that a lot of hunters and fishers that that know about it certainly do. I think there's a lot of myth and legend going around. Years ago, when lead shot was made illegal for duck hunting, for waterfowl hunting, there was a lot of discussion about how it was scarring the inside of guns and, this fear factor that was going around. Of course, that's not true. And now, it's readily accepted that it's even better at, first of all, for hunting, for killing, as well as better for the environment and better for families that are then ingesting the wild meat that's been harvested. It is a good question. I think there's a lot of people are reacting in fear. Change is hard. And there's a lot of strong lobby that support keeping lead in fishing and hunting, and that's something that I really don't understand. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't protect hunters or fishermen or their families, and it's devastating on wildlife. So it is a good question. As I say, I think there's a fear factor that I've picked up on, and I think others have as well, and I don't quite understand it.
Fear factor that if, for example, lead ammunition is banned, that maybe they think there's a slippery slope happening here.
Well, that seems to be. In fact, I didn't even realize that because I'm not anti-hunting. I'm not anti-fishing. I'm not anti-gun, and so I didn't even. It didn't even occur to me that might be the indication. I kept working with people, thinking, why can't, if it's poison, why are you not anxious to remove it from our environment? I remember myself as a young mother in the 1970s when lead was being removed from paint, and there was a huge outcry from paint companies that were saying, well, we're going to be put out of business, and this is terrible, we have to retool all of our companies, and this economically is going to be a disaster, as well as the paint won't stick to the walls. I remember that one specifically because mm-hmm. My daughter was very young, and I was redoing her room, and I remember thinking, oh my goodness, the paint won't stick to the wall. But obviously that was an error. And now anytime we think about a bit of lead being in even any paint on children's toys or anything, it's recalled, and we are very careful that children are not allowed to have access to it. And so that and that's just 40 years. That's just 40 years ago. So within that time, we went from, hysteria and, companies, feeling like they were going to be put out of business, to realizing that, it's much safer. Our world is much safer for our children, especially. Children and pregnant women would be the most affected by lead. And, I think that's what's going on now. It's they want to take something away from us. But in the case of taking away a toxin, I'm not, know, I'm not seeing the rationale behind it.
The NRA started a website called huntfortruth.org, and it claims the science isn't in yet on lead bullets and the claim that the eagles and other wildlife are being poisoned in this manner. They think that wildlife can ingest lead through other ways. What's your response to that?
Well, you know, I've talked to many of these people. I've invited them, in fact, and not a single one has taken me up on it. I truly feel that if anybody would come and just work with me for a day when we have a lead poison patient in, whether it's a loon or a swan or a bald eagle or a red-tailed hawk, they would change their mind. They would see for themselves rather than repeating this worn-out statement that, you know, that has, as I say, it's just worn out. People have a talking point and those other things. One of them is propaganda. I notice in my Facebook when these people jump on, there are these statements that just come across like canned statements. If that's so, then why are we seeing it? Why are we seeing, I had one trumpeter swan a number of years ago with 68 pellets, lead pellets in its crop. It died, of course. And another one that had 27. And these are, you know, they're small, but they're, you know, significant enough in size. It takes a piece of lead the size of a grain of sand, according to the CDC, to poison a human child. So you can see how more dramatic this is for wildlife that are much smaller.
We are talking about the lead poisoning of wildlife with Marge Gibson, the founder and executive director of the Raptor Education Group in Antigo, which tries to help birds, including bald eagles, that are suffering from lead poisoning, which is something that they can get by eating the remains of deer that were shot with lead ammunition. And we wonder what you think. We wonder if you think we should ban lead ammunition or fishing tackle. If you think there ought to be more regulation of this, or if you disagree, what are your questions? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And Marge, there is a bill in Congress that. I explain what this bill would do. It would exempt ammunition and fishing tackle from the Toxic Substances Control Act.
Right. Well, it does take the EPA's power away to control lead in the environment or in hunting and fishing specifically, which, as I say, I don't know what the downside is. That's one question I continue to ask people when we get into these discussions is, what is the downside of using lead alternative in hunting and fishing? And they talk about cost. It's more expensive. And as I say, I fish, and my family has hunted. You know, I'm a native of northern Wisconsin, so I grew up with this environment, and I purchased these things, so I'm very aware that like 100 lead sinkers a few years ago, the lead sinkers at Gander Mountain were $6.80-some, and this was for 100 lead sinkers, but for lead alternative, it was like $8. For 100. Now, you know, unless you're using them in really odd ways, you don't go through 100 sinkers all that fast, and $2 doesn't seem like a lot of money, especially when things for hunting and fishing are very expensive. Everything from the clothing to the, fishing rods. As I say, my grandchildren are at an age now where, you know, we're buying fishing rods and boat, and all these things are very expensive. So I don't understand. It's not rational to say that, you know, it's more expensive to have copper jacketed bullets. How many bullets do you use a year when you hunt? Is it a little more expensive? Yes, but that cost, I believe, will come down just as as things tend to when they become more available and more requested.
We have many callers now. Dennis in Green Bay is with us first. Hello, Dennis.
Good morning. I'm a hunter, fisherman, former NRA member, and there are alternatives. I think that hunters are afraid of, and fishermen are afraid of, the increased cost. But it doesn't cost that much more. They make solid copper bullets to use now, so. And I, as much as the NRA has done some good things, some people live and breathe by what they say, and they're going to follow them no matter what, and I think they're wrong on a lot of things.
Dennis, so you have switched then to...
Yes.
What convinced you to switch?
The environment, number one, and the animals, the fish, digesting the lead.
Yeah.
It's not safe.
Well, what your reaction, Marge?
Hunters and fishermen are conservationists. I think that, true hunters and fishermen are the first conservationists, actually. And it's part of my culture, certainly. But we find that people like Dennis have already switched. It's a group of people who haven't, and I. It's interesting he brought up the NRA. I also feel that's my culture, so they're my people as well. And I feel like they're being made, lack of a better word, fools of, because they're being told that this is a huge issue. This is something you need to fight against. I've even read that it's they're taking away our culture. There's nothing cultural about putting toxins in your family and in the environment. It's safer when we discover that something is poisonous. We make changes. That's what evolving society does. And this is certainly a problem. It's not anti-hunting. It's not anti-fishing. It's simply making it safer for the environment, for your family, and for wildlife.
We have less than a minute. Are you hoping, Marge, that the lead ammunition and tackle is banned, or what is your hope?
Yes, obviously I do. I'm personally invested, however, and financially invested. I always, when people talk about the additional cost, they don't see that when a bald eagle comes in to a wildlife center, ours is, we're not state or federally supported, we're a nonprofit, we absorb that $2,000. We're the ones who are doing the physical work, and we see them. We're with them. So it is personal to us as well as it's important for society.
We are talking about the lead poisoning of wildlife. Marge Gibson is our guest. She is with the Raptor Education Group in Antigo. A bald eagle that was at the Raptor Education Group in Antigo died last week from lead poisoning. And our guest says this happens far too often and can be prevented. And we welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll check news and then we'll be back with more of your phone calls. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Marge Gibson, the founder and executive director of the Raptor Education Group Incorporated, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to the care and rehabilitation of injured or orphaned native bird species and public education of wildlife issues. And she is educating us on the issue of lead poisoning of wildlife. They treated a bald eagle at the Raptor Education Group in Antigo last week. A bald eagle suffering from lead poisoning was brought to the organization, but he didn't make it. He was too far gone. And the Raptor Education Group posted on its Facebook page, "It's past time to get lead out of our environment, if not for wildlife, for our own families that eat wild game. It is an indiscriminate killer. There is no survival of the fittest involved or letting nature take its course. The strongest and fittest eat carrion, particularly in the winter season. This adult male was doing what nature told him to do, and without tasting or feeling particles, he got a huge dose of lead. Lead is a soft metal and dissipates into the hunted animal's tissue and organs. Those that don't understand often leave those animal parts that are not eaten by their family out, particularly to feed eagles and other wildlife. They do not understand that the result is the opposite of their intention." So we're talking about how do we prevent this lead poisoning of wildlife. Should lead ammunition and lead fishing sinkers and tackle be banned to prevent this? We have many callers, so let's go to Dave in Maryland first. Hello, Dave.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I understand that you have some experience with bald eagles, too?
Yes, I run a Facebook page called Conowingo Bald Eagles here in Maryland. Conowingo is it's a dam in Maryland that has one of the largest concentrations of bald eagles on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So we see lots of eagles there in the wintertime, sometimes 200 to 300. So I've been dealing with a lot of these issues as well, trying to get attention with the Fish and Wildlife and the Department of Natural Resources about fishing tackle, sinkers that get lost or get thrown into the water, the Susquehanna River. And basically, all those agencies look the other way. They don't seem to be interested in this issue. Unless there are hundreds of bald eagles dying on the streets, they're ignoring the issue. Part of it, I think, is what the young lady mentioned, is pressure from groups like the NRA. There's currently a Senate bill, 405, that's so-called Sportsman Act of 2015, that's going through the Senate now. And a lot of pressure is on groups like the EPA. They're excluding the EPA from addressing the lead ammunition issue. So the problem continues when you have all these large lobbying groups applying pressure to all these agencies to look the other way. For why are they doing this? No one seems to know. They seem to be feeling like it's one step closer to people taking their guns or the ammunition away. And it's just not true. A lot of these deaths can be avoided, and they can switch to non-lead products right now.
Thank you, Dave. Certainly, we've touched on this, but yeah, the bill that we were talking about, you say, is unfortunately named the Sportsman's Act of 2015. Marge,
right? I think that the name is really misleading, and it was probably named that on purpose because it rallies sportsmen thinking that that this is something that's against them. And in fact, it's not. It's interesting how, as Dave was saying, that the government agencies do look the other way. And in fact, in our own state, for the last several years, it's been The DNR is not even able to talk about or address lead poisoning, which I think is a real shame, because our state is amazing. Our state is filled with natural resources that truly need to be protected, not only for hunting and for fishing, but people are drawn to our state because of the amazing natural resources. They come here to vacation and to be part of the world around us. We that live in Wisconsin, especially northern Wisconsin, I think a lot of people take it for granted a little bit, but this is not what the rest of the world looks like. You know, we live in this this beautiful area, and truly I think that, you know, we need to spend as much attention protecting our natural resources as we do trying to recruit additional hunters and pay more attention to a group of declining people.
We had a caller who couldn't wait, who said that she believed California, the state of California, banned lead ammunition in part to save the California condor.
It's true. In fact, back in the 1980s, I worked on the California Condor Recovery Program, so I have a lot of history with them as well. We had a large wildlife center in Southern California back at that time. And it's not banned yet, but it's supposed to be in a few years. But there's a lot of resistance against it. And, you know, we're talking about a bird who was, when I was working with him, there were only six in the wild in the early 1980s. And, you know, we were looking at extinction. And, you know, now we have more, a couple of hundred, but they succumb to lead poisoning so quickly. Yeah. And, you know, it's a huge problem. But, again, we're facing that same thing. There's a lot of activists in California that are fighting it even now.
So this is not something that has to be done, I don't know, through the EPA or on the federal level. State by state could ban lead ammunition.
They certainly could. They certainly could. It would be better if it were federal. Yeah, they certainly could. And you know, I think that if a state has enough interest in their population, in the people of the state, you know, they need to start putting that ahead of politics. And I don't understand when that doesn't happen. I just think that, you know, we as public are important, and we should have, you know, equal billing.
Well, you know, Dave mentioned that unless hundreds of bald eagles are dying in the streets in front of us, the regulators are just turning turning the other cheek to this. Is it because is there a feeling that the bald eagle, it has recovered, you know, from its threatened status, and that this lead poisoning doesn't affect that many of them? So maybe that's where some of the opposition comes from?
Well, you know, I think that's partially true. But I think also wildlife rehabilitators are the ones who receive these birds. And even then, up in my part of Wisconsin, only about 1 or 2% of injured birds are actually recovered and brought into wildlife centers, because we don't have a large population in the area. And there's a lot of wooded areas. Animals, when they're sick, tend to go off and hide, so they're not predated on. And, you know, they're never found. So when you look at those statistics, and I think that, you know, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. They don't see the bald eagle dying. I do. And that's why I always invite people, please come. You're welcome to come. I would love for you to be here, to be part of the work that we do. And if people see it, if they see the bald eagle dying, and trumpeter swans that we actually in the state spent a great deal of money trying to reintroduce and to bring their population up, and lead poisoning is killing so many of them.
Let me get one more caller in before we end.
Sure.
Jim in River Falls. Hi, Jim. I understand you're a veterinarian, and you've dealt with this issue too.
Yeah, I'm a zoo veterinarian. I don't deal with rehabilitation animals at this point, but I have dealt with trumpeter swans that have had lead poisoning due to shot. I don't know that that is quite as big of an issue anymore, because the lead shot ban for waterfowl hunting has helped in that aspect. Certainly with lead bullets used for deer hunting, and I'm a hunter too, I just actually bought a shotgun yesterday, so I would not want to eat any game shot by lead bullets though either. I use copper bullets for deer hunting, and I don't understand why people don't want to protect themselves either.
Thank you for calling. We have just a minute to go. We didn't get to that part. Your statement on Facebook is this could pose a threat to humans too.
Absolutely. The analyzer that we have that was actually developed to test children in the projects, mostly for lead paint. But if children are eating this game that's been harvested and it isn't processed in the right way, it's dangerous. And it does cause mental retardation, causes physical slowness, and many other things. So these are known results of lead poisoning and lead exposure in children. I just don't, as I say, it boggles the mind as to why any person would expose their children to these toxins.
We just 30 seconds to go. What should people do if they are interested in learning more about this issue or doing something about this issue?
Find out for yourself. Don't be led by strong lobbies and by the sportsman's camaraderie of people that make you feel that, you have to think one way or another. Think for yourself. Do your own research. And I bet that they will come up with trying to protect themselves and their families. This isn't an anti-sportsman issue. This is a lead alternative, a safe issue, safe for humans and for wildlife.
Marge, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Marge Gibson is the founder and executive director of the Raptor Education Group in Antigo. Thanks to Kayla Blado and to Cynthia Schuster for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.